Okay, Parshas Vayetze. So the Parsha begins, of course, with the infamous trip of Yaakov Avinu to Haran, and the understanding that while he was there, he stopped in that place being, of course, Aram Moriah, and he has a dream. He dreams about a ladder standing on the ground. You know, the Balaturim notes that the Sulam in Gematria equals coal, which, of course, he assumes is a reference to prayer. So somebody who has the right kavana has an opportunity to have his or her prayer ascend the ladder to Shamayim. Elsewhere, the Baal Shem Tov compares the gematria of Sulam to that of Sinai. I've seen this in other sources as well. And then, of course, the logic would suggest that one who studies Torah is able to ascend the ladder towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A third reference, Rav Chaim Valashner in Nefesh HaChaim, highlights that man's soul is also hinted to in the image of Sulam. So here you have three elements, man's soul, tefillah, and Limudat Torah, to which Rav Asher Weiss Shalita notes that a soul that is bereft of tefillah without Torah, or a soul that has tefillah and no Torah, or a soul that has Torah without tefillah, is an incomplete soul. Tefillah is an expression of Yiras Shamayim, and we need both Torah and Yiras Shamayim if we're going to succeed in ascending our mountain towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then Yaakov Avinu goes out to Haran, and he has his episode with Laban, and he winds up with two wives, and Rachel is the beloved wife, and Leah, of course, also beloved, but not as beloved as Rachel. And so she starts to have children. And when she has the fourth child, she says, Hapam odes Hashem, this time I want to thank Hashem. The Gemara tells us in Brachos that from the day the world was created, there was no one who was moded to Hashem until Leah came along at the time of his birth. Thus, Hodat, the concept, Hapam odes, seems to imply a concept of thanksgiving. And the name Yehuda, whose name becomes synonymous with Yehudim, with Jews, is based on the principle of Hodah. But later the Gemara in Sotah tells us Yehuda too is known for Hodah. There the Gemara says in Sotah that in regard to the episode with Tamar, Yehuda Hodah velo Bosh. Here also Yehuda represents the epitome of Hodah, but instead of it being a reference towards thanksgiving, it becomes a reference to admission. Is there any connection between thanks and admission? So Rav Huttner says, absolutely. Rav Huttner notes that contained within each and every word of thanks, every hodah, a thank you, there is an inherent recognition that I couldn't do it without you. This recognition of man's limitations is also an admission to a smaller degree of man's failing without God. And so therefore, within Yehuda's admission, there is a thank you. Within Leah's thank you, there is a recognition that she is relying on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, carries the idea into the Moda Ani that we recite each and every morning. A male will say Moda, a female says Moda Ani, and we offer thanksgiving, because at the first moment of the dawn of another day, we also recognize that the creator of that moment not only deserves our thank you, but it's also an admission that he runs the world in the process. So Rachel recognizes that Leah is having four children, and she gets angry and she says to Yaakov, Havali banim, I want children. V'mayin mesa anoche, if not, I am going to, I'm going to die. So Yaakov gets angry at Rachel and he says, Atachas Elokim Anochi Hashem Anami Mech Privaten. Am I here instead of God who's held children away from you? And one has to smart and marvel at Yaakov Avinu's slap and apparent lack of insensitivity. How could Yaakov have been so insensitive? I mean, I know the Mefarshim jump on her, Chazal jump on him for his situation. But the late great Rosh Yeshiva of Ofakim, Rav Chaim Kamil, notes that it was a message that Yaakov was actually giving to Rachel. He was trying to tell her that it was her tefillos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. It wasn't that Yaakov was saying, I'm not going to daven. but rather that it's not going to be his tefillah that's going to be the catalyst, as much as it would be her tefillah that would be the catalyst in getting her to her heart's desires. Well, too often we run to Rebbes to give us brachas. A bracha from a Rebbe is a very important thing, but not nearly as important as the impetus for each and every one of us to daven that comes along with it as well. So, continuing on with that theme, Rachel starts to do whatever hishtadlus she can, and of course, when she finds out that her nephew Reuven has brought forth Dudaim, she works over to Leah and she says, you know, can I get some of those Dudaim? And Leah responds, and again, one of those incredibly unbelievable statements, Hama'at kachteches ishti v'lakachas gamas dudai b'ni. She says, isn't it enough that you tried to take away my husband? Is it that you now want to take my son's dudaim? And one has to smart and again scratch one's head and say, how could Leah Imenu challenge of all people Rachel Imenu? Didn't Leah know that the only reason she was going to make it as a wife of Yaakov was due to the incredible sacrifice of her sister Rachel? So Rav Shalom Shvadron explains that the simanim that Rachel had given over were not any old simanim. Anchoring himself in the commentary of the Dasakenami Balei HaTosas, Rav Shadron explains that the simanim were the mitzvos of Nida, Chala, and Adlakas Haner. Rachel never introduced these as simanim. What she did when she sat down with Leah was she told her, look, these are the Jewish laws that a Jewish bride needs to know. And so therefore Leah never understood the sacrifice that Rachel was providing for her. She thought that she was giving her a shear for things that she would need to know. That's an ultimate statement in the chesed of Rachel Imenu. And not only did she engage in that self-sacrifice for the sake of her sister, she did it without letting her sister know that she was really engaging in the sacrifice. Eventually, the 11 children are born, and Yaakov Avinu makes a decision to go back home. And in the context of heading back home, Rachel took the trufim that belonged to her father and placed them under the saddle and sat down on top of them. And the Zohar HaKadosh explains that she took the trufim so that Lavan would not be able to use the idols and the spiritual impurity of the idols to be an internal GPS system. That somehow by sitting on the trufim, she rendered the trufim useless. How is that possible? So the Zohar HaKadosh explains that when we sit on something, we show that we degrade it. And once trufim are degraded, they're powerless. And the great Gaon of Yerushalayim, Rav Avigdor Nebenzahl Shalita, explains that the same thing is true about other forces that we think control our lives as well. They can only have an effect on us when we allow them to ensnare us. But once we decide to overpower those forces, they too become powerless in front of us. I think a critical lesson when we're dealing with life and with some of the challenges of emotional difficulties, physical difficulties, people who stand in our way, which appear and who appear at times to be immovable. Yet when we finally decide to move them, and we note that we are on top of them, indeed, we are able to certainly overpower them instead of them overpowering us. So Yaakov Avinu gets angry at Lavan, and he says, look, ma pishu ma kachartasi, you've been all the way around my tent. What's my transgression? What did I do wrong to you? And what becomes of Yaakov Avinu's anger when he finally loses it on Lavan? How does he express himself? Does he note the regular cheating that Lavan did to him? Does he explain the cheating of his wife, the extra years of work? Does he note the mockery? No. Rav Yechiel Yitzchak Per Shalita, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva Farakwe, notes that he doesn't. The fact is, says Rabbi Per, the Yaakov Avinu could not allow himself to get angry at Lavan. After all, Lavan was the grandfather of his children and the father of his beloved wives. Not only that, says Rabbi Per, it's unbecoming of a tzaddik to get angry. And if that's the case, says Rabbi Per, it speaks volumes of the evils of anger and the lengths that a tzaddik like Yaakov will go to avoid the anger. Now, what about you and me? How are we supposed to handle our moments of anger? So, Rabbi Peer used to talk about the altar of Kelim, of Simcha Zissel, who is one of the great Talmidim of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who took it upon himself not to get angry until he put on his special garment. That by the time he put on his angry coat, he discovered that his anger had dissipated. Giving oneself some space before coming angry, instead of just trying to restrain the anger, probably seemed to give the altar of Kelim the means to deal with the practice. That if we, so to speak, truly control our anger, it'll die just like any other human quality that can find itself no means of expression does as well. We just have to go ahead and put it into context and remember that we're on top of our anger instead of our anger owning us. Finally, at the end of the parsha, Lavan and Yaakov agreed to put up stones as a monument to their promise, whether you want to call it Yigar Sa'adusa or Galid. Yaakov tells his Vayomer Elechav Luktu Avonim. He tells his brothers, gather stones. And Rav Elia Meir Bloch, the late great, tells the Rosh Hashiva, stops and says, wait a minute, Yaakov Avinu had but one brother, and I'm pretty sure he wasn't present. So who were the brothers that he was talking to when he said, gather stones? Rav Elia Meir explains that those are the spiritual brothers, those who join us in our spiritual endeavors. And what Yaakov Avinu was trying to say is that he was trying to enjoin those who were with him and his mission to feel like full-fledged partners, brothers in the process of spreading Kavod Shamayim. Don't feel like a secondary individual. This is a critical message that he wanted to bring forth. Finally, a thought on the Haftorah. The Haftorah tells us, Vayivrach Yaakov stay Lavan, Vayavod Yisrael Sham B'Yishol B'Yisha Shamar, that Yaakov ran away to the fields of Lavan, but it was Yisrael who worked for a woman there, and then he guarded for a woman, or for a woman he guarded. And of course, one needs to stop and notice a couple of strange things in the Pasuk. First of all, the change from Yaakov to Yisrael, and the mention of two women, and the fact that the first woman is placed after the verb, vayavod, versus the second one, where the woman comes beforehand. Rav Shechter Shalita has pointed out to us that the reference here in the Pasuk is obviously of reference to Yaakov Avinu's experiences with finding a shidduch. Fact of the matter is, says Rav Shechter, Yaakov Avinu wanted to follow in the pathways of his parents and have only one wife. And that was his intention at the period in time where he decided to get married and to work for his wife, Vayu Beinav Ki Yamim Achadim. It was a short period of time. After he was tricked the first time, and his father-in-law Laban said, Malei Shavu Azos, just finish up this week, V'netna Lecha, and we'll give to you. At that point in time, Yaakov had two wives, Ubi Isha, but still had to work another 7 years. And one might think and get the impression that that second 7 years was going to be a period in time of great difficulty for Yaakov Avinu. Still notwithstanding, Shamar, he kept his word and worked with the same gusto. Rav Shechter used to ask us, why was it that Yaakov Avinu had it so hard in finding Shidduchim? Why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Yaakov to work 14 whole years for the Imahos? He explains that it was necessary because through each of the marriages we were going to get members of the Shvatim and ultimately Am Yisrael. And that things that come with effort, and sometimes, yes, even through difficulty, are things that last in life. And thus the Navi begins with Yaakov, but ultimately the destiny of the Jewish people, Ubi Yisrael, is a result that comes as a consequence of Yaakov's efforts and his attitude of sticking with it. Wishing you all a Shabbat Shalom.